A few weeks ago, I was working with a coaching client. She's an author, and we were working together to bring more visibility to her books. And one of the ideas that I offered her was I thought that she should approach podcasts for interview opportunities. And she asked me if I knew anybody who could recommend a podcast booking agency. And I know a few people who have worked with booking agencies in the past, so I reached out to them and I said, hey, you know, are there any agencies that you recommend? Who should my client talk to? And I got some names and some contact information. But then I thought, I know a guy who has worked with his wife, who is also an author, and has gotten her booked on podcast interviews. And I know they've worked with podcast booking agencies. Maybe he knows somebody. So I reached out to him, and his response absolutely blew me away. He came up with so many creative ways for my client to approach different podcasts and different audiences to talk to spread the word about her book. I was so impressed with what he had to say to my client about this that I went back to my client and I said, you don't need to work with a booking agency. This is the guy. You need to work with this guy. He has it figured out. He knows how to get people booked and the different angles to take, and the creative way that he approaches it is just so phenomenal. I was so impressed. And then I started to think, you know, I tell my six-figure systems people all the time that one of the best ways to build visibility into their business is to get interviewed. I should probably introduce them to my friend. So that's what I'm doing today. This is episode 136 of the Tiny Course Empire podcast. And today I want to introduce you to my friend, Dan Morris. He has, like I said, some really amazing, really unique strategies for getting booked on podcasts as the expert. Whether you are an author or you are a small business owner or you are a blogger, whatever it is that you do, Dan's unique way of looking at your business and his unique approach to getting podcast interviews booked. Well, first, I got to tell you, he has a 90% success rate with his wife, Rachel Martin, getting her booked on different podcast interview or podcast shows. So that alone is just phenomenal. So that's who we're going to talk to today. I think that if you are looking to build visibility in your business, as I am, then I think you should sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil and be prepared to take notes, because this interview is just filled with actionable strategies you can use in your business. Quick reminder, you'll find the show notes and recommended resources, and of course, the link to connect with Dan in the show notes at tinycourseempire.com/136. And if you are watching on YouTube, they'll be in the description. So with that said, let's go.
Welcome to the Tiny Course Empire podcast, a weekly show dedicated to helping you launch and grow your digital course business, even if you don't have a big team or a six-figure ads budget. We'll help you design smart systems, take consistent action, and achieve massive success on your own terms. Now, here's your host, Cindy Bedar.
All right. Welcome, Dan, to the podcast, to the Tiny Course Empire podcast. I am, like, you were, like, way up near the top of my guest list. So I'm super excited that you said yes, that you agreed to come talk to us, because I think that what you are doing with getting, with landing podcast interviews, both for your wife, Rachel, and for other people is just phenomenal. And I know
I have fun doing it.
Clearly you have fun doing it. And I know that this is something that my audience is really interested in, because I've talked to them about it before. I've recommended it to them before. I keep telling them, you need to go out and get interviewed. You need to be seen. And they keep saying, okay, but how do I do that? And I said, I know a guy. You're the guy.
I know a guy.
You know a guy?
He makes eggnog. I like it. He goes down the street.
Eggnog is good. Eggnog is a thing.
Yes, it is.
So talk to me about, so first of all, tell me, I want you to tell me about the success that you are having with this, because when I reached out to you a couple of months ago about my client, who was looking to get interviewed on podcasts, one of the things that you told me, and I about fell out of my chair, was that you have something like, what, 90% success rate? What's the percent
Yeah.
success rate you have getting Rachel booked on podcast?
Oh, like 90.
Yeah.
But with Rachel, I have some of the secret weapon. That's not everybody has it. And the secret weapon with her, and this you should take note if you're watching this, because you probably have this, but you probably don't know. Rachel was on the Today Show, and she was on Good Morning America.
That's kind of a
So
big name drop, isn't it?
yeah, so when I include that in the pitch, like it's lights out, it's all over. Like that's all it takes, most of them. But when I say that, like everybody has something. The problem is you don't think about using it. That's the problem. And sometimes the thing that you have is also the key to more podcasts that you hadn't considered. So like your client, she actually got started writing when she was young, and she won a contest. Like this is when she was a kid, writing a screenplay for 4-H. 4-H is like, you don't really even think about that after elementary school or after middle school or something. Yeah, I mean, that's something kid. But 4-H is a big national organization. And the idea that you might have gotten your start because you won a contest through 4-H, and now you're an author. Like, that's a success story. So just even the idea of, ooh, maybe they would be interested in writing a success story thing, or maybe they have a podcast, or maybe every state in the country has a 4-H and they would all be interested in this success story. So you got to find this thing in your past. You were on TV, you were on local TV, which means you were on NBC, right? If you're on local TV, if you're on like a local news, you were on CBS. So to some degree it helps if you find this thing in your past that, best-selling author, whatever it is, but you have to use it, because podcasts, the podcaster, for one, they're interested in the subject, but for two, they want to be able to say, I have this special person on. They don't want to just say I've got, Jake coming on. They want to say best-selling author Jake, or I have Jake who's been on NBC, or I have Jake who won this contest, or they need something.
I have
So
Dan, who has a 90% success rate getting booked on podcasts.
yeah. So you gotta have this thing, because more than the subject, they're also, I mean, instantly when they're reading it, they're thinking, oh yeah, this could be a good guest, is like even the thought before the subject. So you need a thing. You need to find your whatever it is. And if you don't have anything, turn something you did in, using copy
So
into something that sounds cool.
how do we identify that thing about ourselves? I mean, I think you're right. I think we all have that thing, but I think that we're so used to downplaying our own strengths
Oh yeah. Yeah, I have to
that
tell
it's
clients,
hard
like,
to see that.
I need your most boastful thing you could possibly come up with. And most of them, just like you said, they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I need your most boastful thing. And even if that's you waited until you are 50 to start a podcast, like that's a thing. That's great for midlife podcasts. I mean, that's something. That gives me something to go after. So we all have it. You're the first podcaster in your state, and that's not true, but somebody is. Like, so, there's something in your past. Maybe you have 8 kids, like that's something. I can use that. But you need something. And just being a small business owner is not necessarily a thing. We need more than that.
Now I'm thinking back to every, I've had a lot of phone calls today, and I'm thinking back to all of my phone calls, to all of my coaching calls, and thinking, yeah, that's her. Like I just got off the phone with a woman earlier who was homeschooled, and she's older, right?
Yeah.
So homeschooling is common now.
But homeschooling before it was cool.
But homeschooling before it was cool, that's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
Back when it was shunned, back when you could
Yes.
have gone to jail in some states.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a
Yeah.
thing.
So what's the thing? Oh, that is golden. I love that.
So
Love
the
it.
thing. And then I teach this other concept called vested audiences as well. The thing can also lead to what I call a vested audience. And that is, there are people out there who are paid to share what you do. Like, that is their job. So, for instance, I graduated from the University of Nebraska and one of my degrees. And the University of Nebraska has an alumni group. The alumni group has a magazine. The people who run the magazine are paid to share alumni news. That is their goal. That's their job in life. So if you call them and say, hey, I started a podcast, I graduated in 96, whatever, they're like, oh, really? Tell us more about it because we have to tell everyone what the alumni are doing. They're paid to do this. And there's lots of people who are paid to share what you do. So here's a non-alumni example. My podcast is a history podcast where I tell stories about the 20th century that most people wouldn't necessarily know. And typically, I connect things you wouldn't normally connect. So on one occasion, I connected the history of cholera, or not history of cholera, but the cholera epidemic with the origin of pizza. So if it wasn't for the cholera epidemic, there probably wouldn't be pizza the way it is today. And that's because cholera was a disease that nobody really understood how it was transmitted, but it was killing a lot of people. But in Italy, they did notice that if you ate the pizza, you probably didn't get sick. And that's because the pizza dough was deep fried. Like, and if there was anything, like it was dead. So it was pretty safe food. So, you know, that's a thing, right? So I decided, you know what, I want to find out who talks about cholera because they might like, you know, they might be interested in the episode. Well, I found out that there is cholera historians and there is a society and they have a newsletter and this podcast was fascinating to them. So they put it in their newsletter. This was the very first time. And I was like, you're going to share it for free? They're like, what do you mean? We have a newsletter. We need content like anyone else. And this podcast is content for us. Like, you know, to tell people that there is an episode out there that ties pizza to cholera. Like, they are vested in cholera. Like, that's their thing. So as long as I got my podcast in front of them, then they were like, yes, we definitely want to share this. We want to put it in our website. We want to put it in our newsletter. We want to take snippets of it. It's very cool for us. I'm like, I wonder how many more organizations would have a vested interest in the things that I talk about because they're trying to share that with their audiences. If we go back to your client in the 4-H, now I'm thinking, what 4-H groups in the United States would be interested in a success story? So start pitching it. Like, hey, this is a success story. Well, and all of a sudden, like, oh, really? We would like to learn more about that. So we're taking something that you did, something your show is about, something you're about, something in your history, and you find people on the planet who would be interested in sharing that. And there are lots. You just have to be willing to look. That's kind of the thing.
This is fascinating to me because it goes so far beyond the the usual, you know, when I talk to people about getting interviewed on podcasts, our mind always goes to, oh, okay, so I'm going to pitch Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan and, you know, Amy
Oh.
Porterfield and that that's great if you can land those kinds of gigs, but the odds of landing those gigs are pretty slim. And you've got, you know, there's a ton of competition and there's no hook there. You don't have the thing that's going to make Joe Rogan interested in you, but you do have the thing that's going to make the cholera newsletter interested in you.
Yeah. And they have thousands of doctors who read this thing like thousands. And even, what was it? The Holocaust Museum found one of mine and they didn't find it. Let me tell you that. They didn't find it. I use this service called TalkWalker, mm-hmm. which is free. And other people use Google Alerts. It's the same thing.
Okay.
So I break down every show of mine into as many segments as I possibly can. So the history of pizza would be pizza, history of pizza, cholera, Mount Vesuvius, like all these things that I mentioned. And then I actually just track those using TalkWalker. So I want to know anytime anyone on the planet mentions history of pizza or cholera. And then every single day, my morning coffee ritual, which I actually drink hot chocolate, but my morning coffee ritual is I go through my special email I have set up for TalkWalker and I look for anyone who's talking about these subjects. And some of them are people I never would have, like the cholera historian, like I never would have known existed, and let alone know that they have a podcast and that they would be interested in, you know, talking about it further. So, and then I track them every single day. So I think I get 300 some emails a day. And now I kind of, so many of them that I go sort of by subject line, I can sort of tell, not that today. But then you can find people who have a podcast, who talk about it, who have a newsletter, who have something. Because, you know, getting on a podcast is great, right? But what we're really trying to do is get in front of people.
Right.
So whether it's a news station, whether it's a newsletter, whether it's a podcast, it doesn't really matter. We're trying to get in front of people who have an interest in what we're talking about. So I like to think of that as I want to get in front of an audience, and I don't really care if it's a podcast, or if it's a YouTube video, or if it's a newsletter, or if it's a live stream for a private community. You know, it doesn't really matter. We're trying to get in front of an audience. So mostly I'm tracking my subjects. And then when it comes to booking clients, I'm really looking first is how does this client make money, right? Outside of the podcast. Like, what is it that they need? Like, who do they need to hear the message? That's my number one thing. So if it's an author, then... you know, if you want to get heard by other authors because you sell some sort of how to be an author, how to sell books, then that's a thing. But if you're trying to sell the book and the book is a fiction book for kids, then the question is, okay, who's reading this book? And then what do they listen to? First of all, where are they going to be? So if it's like a fiction book, then I want to find fiction podcasts, like fiction book podcasts. And then sometimes I think, well, are the readers actually listening to fiction book podcasts? Maybe, you know, some of them. But there's probably other angles associated with what you do that might bring an audience to you. So maybe you're a writer in Connecticut. Is there a Connecticut Writers Association who would be like to feature you as an author and then talk about your book that you just brought out? Because maybe some of that audience actually reads books, considering it's all authors. And, you know, and maybe they'd be interested in reading it because you're from Connecticut and they're from Connecticut. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'd like to read something somebody local wrote. So you got to start going through kind of who you are. Why would someone be interested? What are the different angles? It's not only the book, but it's also the author. And then the book, you know, sometimes there's podcasts for the subject of your book. And maybe you're going to pitch the podcast because maybe they don't really do books, but it's a similar audience. It's a similar concept. I'm really trying to think of an angle for you or an example. Oh, so in your client's book, the girl in this fiction book is the hero. So in my head, I'm okay, who's interested in female heroines? Like, who is interested in that? And then if it is a girl, well, then like, what about raising girls podcasts? Like, people who are interested in raising girls, because she has to write all about this girl. And then this girl has to get out of a bad situation, right? And then she ends up going to community college. So it's like, oh, well, maybe I could pitch some raising girls podcasts, because they can talk about what do you do when you're writing about, you know, a girl who becomes a heroine. And then also the moms who are listening to that podcast, maybe that's a book they would get for their daughters. You know, like if you could talk about how this person got out of the situation, maybe they would think, ooh, maybe my daughter would be interested in this, because she would also see this heroine went to community college. Maybe that would be something interesting for the mom, like to see this role model gets out of a thing and goes to college. Like, you know, maybe that's worth buying that book. So you just have to really think through you, your book, the pieces of it. This girl in this book actually went to community college to learn code. And girls who learn code is like a thing. There's a whole, you know, there's a whole movement around girls who learn code.
Yeah, so there's a whole website about girls who code, I think.
Yeah. So would those people be interested in the podcast? Would they be interested in hearing about a book that features a girl who learns code? Like, you know, that's another angle. So you really just have to start dissecting what it is that you wrote into the different parts. Maybe it takes place in Philadelphia. Like, well, you know, are there Philadelphia local podcasters who would be interested in you because you can talk about the different places you mentioned in your book? You know, that's kind of like the pitch, like how we make it happen.
I find this creativity that you have just so fascinating, because like I said, these are not angles that I would have considered, like, ever. Like my brain just does not go there. But it's one of those things that once you see it, like, you can't unsee it.
No.
So it's got my brain is going in all sorts of directions now for different clients that I have, and even for myself. So how do you go about then like pitching a podcast? So you've identified, you know, the Philadelphia Insiders podcast. So what do you say to these people? Hey, I've got this book and I'd like you to interview the author. How do you do that?
So first of all, I have to read the book if it's a book. Mm-hmm. If the client wrote a book, I have to read the book, because I can't be caught off guard. That's my first mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. I have to know what we're talking about. And reading the description, that's not very helpful. And I also I can't find those random angles unless I actually dig in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it's your state, right? You have a writer's association and you're a Connecticut writer. So then the question is, okay, I need to go look at this podcast. And you have to go look at them all, every single one of them. And then when you look at the episodes that they've put out, you try to find that one episode where they either talk about like what's coming up in season two or what this podcast is about. You have to listen to that episode. And then I try to find maybe an interview that person did, the host did, or somebody talks about them. Like, I'm looking for the thing that the host is into. That's what I'm looking for. Because then I pitch the idea. Like, I have an idea for your podcast. And maybe, like, in your client's case, one of them, the hosts I actually saw went to community college, and I was like, totally have this idea for your podcast. You went to community college, and not a lot of people do, you know, like it's kind of overlooked. And then mm-hmm, I have mm-hmm. a book for you where the heroine goes to community college, learns to code, and becomes successful. And I think because you went to community college, like, this would be kind of a cool way to bring in your history and then this book to like tell how you became popular. Like, that is the pitch for me. Mm-hmm, is like, mm-hmm. I'm going to tie your history into this book, because it'd be cool to tell how you became a podcaster through how this girl became successful in this book. Like, that is my idea for your show. And then, because I've seen the other shows, what kinds of things the person has accepted to do an episode on, I can sort of reference. I see that you I see that you like this concept. You're into this thing, and I'd like to be able to talk about that, but in a way that you've never talked about it before, like in this fiction book, which you've never done before, which would be a really cool angle for you, because you don't want your sh you know you want to your show to be interesting and new each time the listeners listen. But Rachel, my wife, who talks about motherhood, she talks about her latest book is Get Your Spark Back, which is about kind of like once your kids have grown up, they become a little bit more independent, whether they're in high school, whether they're going to college, whether they're leaving. But there is a point in time as a parent where you're not as needed as you used to be. And so you start to figure out, like, what do you do with your life? Like, that it becomes a moment where you're like, all right, well, now that they're in high school and they drive and they're going to work and I don't really need to do anything anymore, I better figure out what I'm doing. So that's what Get Your Spark Back is, how to get that. So then the question is, okay, from a podcast perspective, all right, so midlife is great. Like, all of the midlife podcasts are perfect. And then the motherhood podcasts are great, because she's a mom. She's got seven kids plus four of mine, so she's got like 11 kids. Those are angles where I say, hey, I've got this idea for you. I know you're a motherhood podcast, and usually you focus on moms of little kids. I see that on all your episodes. But what I thought would be cool is Rachel has 11 kids. She's got seven of her own, and then she's also a bonus mom to four. And she talks about getting your spark back in a book that she recently wrote. And I thought it would be interesting for your audience to hear from someone who's survived all of these early years and now is like trying to tell you, what should you keep a hold of from the early days that you can reignite? Like that. So that might be the podcast, is the idea is, look, most of your episodes are about with kids, with the parents with the young kids. But what if we brought in someone who's lived through that, who's homeschooled, who's public schooled, and we talk about what it is you're expecting, down the road, and how to not lose that spark, maybe. Because, a lot of people lose it in motherhood. So that might be the idea for the show. And then the motherhood, the midlife shows, I mean, it's easy because you're a midlife podcast and we're talking about getting your spark in midlife. So that's an easy avenue. So you really have to. You kind of have, you really need to know what the show's about that you're about to go on. You need to make sure the audience kind of matches who you're trying to be in front of. And then you got to find, what is the host like? Like, what could I pitch that would be interesting to the host? And maybe it bounces off something in their own life. Maybe you read an interview where you figure out why they started the podcast in the first place. You tie your pitch into why they started it. And then you reference that in the pitch. Like, I know you started this podcast because A, B, and C. And I have this guest or me, I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to talk about this subject because I'd love to go back to why you started in the first place. And that's why I wrote this book, or that's why I teach these people. I'd love to tie that into what it is you started this in the first place. So any of those kinds of things where you kind of get into the head of the host usually work out really well. I know all of these podcast agencies talk about sending a one sheet over and putting your topic on, but I never do that ever. And I think it'd be weird to get a one sheet as a podcaster personally. Like, just tell me, like, just send me an email. Like, what do you think this would be a cool idea? And then tie it into something that would resonate with me, and then give me a reason to be excited about the guest, because I obviously I have to boast, like I have to promote my own show, so I have to make a graphic that says, this week a New York Times bestseller, that I have to make that graphic. So give me a reason to make that graphic, like something that would sound cool, and it doesn't have to be. You can say you have a New York Times bestseller on. It can just say, my wife's book is a New York Times bestselling book. Like that's it. That's all you have to say. The podcaster already knows how to take that information and use it in their head to promote it. You don't have to spoon feed it. But you need to give them those little pieces, little things that will be like, oh, interesting, interesting.
I love what you said about the one sheet because this is something, being totally honest, this is something that has held me back. Like, do I need to be sending this document? How do I create this document? I don't even know what, am I going to look like a fool if I put this document together? And it is a difficult document to put together. I mean, we were just talking about how even articulating what your thing is, what that amazing thing is about yourself, is difficult. And then you want to take it and you want to put it in a graphically pleasing, well copywritten document that you're going to send off. That's terrifying.
Well,
So,
and
yeah,
gotta
not
remember,
having to do that, I'm all in.
podcasters are regular people for the most part. Like, they're not used to seeing one sheets. They're not media people. They're not on the news for the last 10 years, and that's all they've dealt with. They're regular people. Even a one sheet might even be weird to them.
It
Like, what
would
do I
probably
do
be
with
weird to
this?
me if somebody pitched an interview for my show and they sent me a one sheet, I would probably think it was weird. But I'll
Yeah,
tell you
with like
what, if somebody pitched an interview for my show and said, I have this guest idea and here's why I think they are going to be phenomenal and here's how it ties into what you talk about on your show, and if they did that really well, I would do everything in my power to get them booked because 99.9% of the pitches that I get for this show are so generic they don't even use my name.
Yeah, usually I get a response that says, "Thank you for that very interesting email." It's usually like the quirky email, or "I really got an interesting email from you today." Like, that's usually the response that I get. Like, "This sounds like an intriguing idea. Tell me more," is what it usually says. And then I think to myself, "Didn't I already tell you everything?
What
what
more do you
else am
want me
I
to
going to say
say?
now?" Yeah, it's funny because that's usually what the response is. Tell me more. And then I'm like, do I just restate what I just said? I guess so.
So, I mean, I tell people all the time, you have to be more personal. You have to actually listen to the podcast that you're pitching. That's kind of a big thing. You have to know, right? You have to know
Now,
who the podcaster is, what they're all about.
I'll add a caveat to that. Because people will tell you need to listen to the podcast, and I am for that. But I'm definitely interested in strategically listening. So I want to read all the descriptions of the last few episodes. I want to get an idea. Like, do they even have guests? Like, that should be your first question. If
That's an important one.
they never have guests, don't waste your time on it. Otherwise,
I can't tell you how many pitches I've gotten. I rarely have guests on this podcast, and that's probably going to change in 2025. But I've
yo.
been doing this for 3 years, and I think you're the third guest I've had on.
It's so interesting.
And
So,
I get pitches all the time, and I'm like, have you even listened to the show? Because I don't have guests. It's a solo show.
if you've only had three, then it's worth starting your podcast intro, your email with, "I see you've only had three guests on your show. And I know you don't usually do guests, but I had this idea for you that I think would be perfect. It would be interesting for your audience. And it is a guest, but this is why I think it would be interesting."
See, that's an email I would read and not put right in the spam folder.
Yeah. So when I say you have to listen to the episode, I think you need to strategically listen. Like, sometimes listening means reading. Like, read the descriptions. Figure out what it's about. But, and I really, really like trying to find that episode where the podcaster says what this show is about. And sometimes it means you have to listen to the first 20 seconds because they tell you in the first 20 seconds. But other times, there's a season two What to Expect episode. Those are good to listen to. And I actually like listening to two or three of those because they give you kind of a more of a gist than listening to one. Because sometimes maybe a season is dominated by something. But when you listen to the What to Expect in Season 3 episode, then you start to see a thread. You're like, oh, I see. This is what they like to do.
Mm-hmm.
You do need to find out. You really need to find out what would be in it for them. Whether it's because it's a tie-in to who they are, because it's a tie-in to the audience that you can clearly see. And you need to say that. I can clearly see that your audience is made of, and then you tell why. Like, why do you think that's the case? And sometimes that's news to the podcast because they've never thought about it. But, you know, I can see from your last five or six episodes where you're teaching crafts in a DIY fashion that your audience is probably, you know, women from 30 to 50 who love to do crafts from home, which made me think of you when I came across this guest idea, because this is what she does and it would totally be perfect for your show and your audience would love it. Like, you have to be able to say that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then if you can say that, then the podcaster who's reading the email will know that you know what you're talking about. And then it's like a slam dunk kind of. You've given them a reason because you said it's the New York Times bestselling author. Like, you've given them something. And then you've told them you understand the audience, which they might not have even understood. And then you tell them what your guest does or what you do and how it would fit. And now it's almost like, how do they say no? Like, how do they
say? Yeah. How can you say no to that?
Like, this is what they're looking for.
Right.
And finding guests and finding content, it's not necessarily easy for everyone. You know, the Joe Rogans of the world, they probably have way too many people who want to be on the show. So for them, you know, it's a different game. You know, it's insider. You know, they probably have a group of people that are bringing the guests to the table.
So that brings up a really good question. Is there a podcast that would be too small for you to pitch? I remember once years ago listening to a guy who used to go by the podcast Answer Man. Do you know, know who I'm talking about? Yeah.
Yeah, Ravenscraft.
Yes, that's him. Cliff Ravenscraft.
He's great. I love him.
He is terrific. He used to say that if you are going to be interviewed on a podcast, or when he would get pitches to be interviewed on podcasts, he would not appear on any show that had fewer than 10 episodes, because for better or for worse, most podcasts fade out after 10 episodes.
Yeah, true.
So is there a line in the sand for you? Like, is there a point where you say, this is not worth my, it's not worth my time?
The line changes. There is no line in the beginning, because the beginning is your chance to figure out how to say what you need to say. And there is great power in being invisible. So if you're on some small podcasts that don't have a lot of listens, and you get a chance to answer some questions and figure out how you're going to present what you're going to present, like, it takes a little work to get it right. You can't just be on a podcast and sell books. Like, that's not a thing. What you have to do is you have to be on a podcast enough times for you to realize that the podcaster is not in control. You have to realize that. And it takes a little while for you to figure that out. Who's in control is you, the guest. And the way that you're in control is that you know what you're trying to do. So you take a question and you spin it to get to the point that you need to make. And until you've done a few and you realize, you know what, I'm just sort of answering questions here. And I'm accepting the questions that are being asked of me, but I'm not being asked the questions that are selling the book. Like, that's what you have to figure out during the first few podcasts that are small and invisible. Because you really need to learn how to sell whatever it is that you're selling. You can't just talk about it. Like, that doesn't sell anything. That's what helps people take notes. It makes them want to learn it, makes them want to do it, but it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to hire you. So you have to learn, like, if it's a book, you have to figure out, all right, how am I going to create intrigue that makes people want to buy this book? Or how am I going to identify the perfect person for this so that it becomes something everybody wants to buy as a gift? Like, you have to figure out, what am I going to do so that when they're done, they get out of their car, they run to their office and write down, I need to buy this book. Because you got to remember, they're mowing their lawn, they're doing exercise, they're at their gym, they're in their car. Like, podcasts are not things you're doing next to the computer when you can instantly Google something.
No.
Like, you're out, you're at the gym. Like, you have to be so good at what you say that you create some sort of intrigue that makes them think, oh man, I really got to figure that. I got to get that. In the beginning, I definitely want you to go after the lowest hanging fruit that you could find that's instantly going to say yes, because you need a little experience. And then as you go and your pitches are getting better and you start getting more and you're on more, then I think you should be a little bit more discerning, because it does take time. But that discerning is sometimes, if the podcaster is well known but still doesn't have a lot of fans, you still can use clips. You can say, I was on, you know, as featured on, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. For instance, there is absolutely no value in going on your local NBC show that talks about local businesses on Sunday at 2. Like, 11 people are going to see that episode. And you were on TV. It's great. That's great. You were on TV. And, you know, when we did Rachel's thing this year, I think we did 40 of those. But what you can say after that is, as seen on NBC. So yes, let's do that. Let's do one in each city. As seen on NBC in Tampa. Great. Mm. But there is a point in time when you're going to start saying no, because you already have that statement. You've mm-hmm. got those clips. You've answered those questions, but now it's not worth your time, because you need to get in front of more people or a bigger audience. So the line will change as you go. And there was a point this year when Rachel was on her 70th podcast or something, when she told me, she's like, look, you got to make sure that there's like 10,000 people per episode at this point. Because, you know, I'm spending 3 hours a day on these podcasts every day of the week. And I was like, all right. The line is drawn. Let's make sure we're now looking for bigger shows. And we're looking for other things. You know, we're looking for closed caption. We're looking for State Farm puts together videos that train their employees on certain things. And, you know, we can take Get Your Spark Back. We can turn that into an educational topic, and I can pitch that, you know, to somebody like that. So the line changes as you go, but I would definitely say there's power in the invisible. So in the beginning, get on some shows, figure out what questions you need to be asked, figure out how to twist the questions that people are asking so you get to what you need to say, figure out how to create intrigue, figure out how to say what you're going to say so that people want to come after you. Because otherwise, you'll be on 100 podcasts and then you'll get no traffic. And you'll wonder, you know, like podcasts are worth nothing. But it's not the podcast, it's you, really. It comes down to your ability to convey a message that gets people to take an action.
So what I'm hearing is that you should treat it as a ladder, which yeah. is pretty much what I've been telling people all along, that you can't just go out and pitch the New York Times with your article.
You don't want to, because you'll screw it up.
Yes, that's an even better way to put it. Yes,
yeah,
you'll screw it up. That's
you'll
not
get
where
on
you
Joe Rogan,
start.
And you'll get on Joe Rogan, and then as soon as it's over,
and he'll
you'll
destroy
say,
you.
But you'll be like, man, I wish I would have said this.
Yeah,
I wish I would have said that. I wish I would have twisted that a little bit better. Like, don't do it on the big shows. Do that on the small shows.
Yeah, good tip. So you mentioned questions, being able to twist the questions to kind of leverage them in the way that makes the most sense for you and for what your goal is for being interviewed in the first place. Is there ever a reason that you would say there should be scripted questions. Do you ever want to see that in a podcast interview? Like,
I
should you
think
be sending the
Rachel.
podcast host your list of questions to ask?
We don't ever do that, but some podcast hosts ask for that. So definitely have, and you'll change them as you do podcasts, but definitely have your questions that you can send. The really good podcasters will not accept those questions. They'll figure out.
I was gonna say, I think poor interviewers want your questions.
If they ask for that, then you know, they're not really doing any, they're not really putting a lot of effort into it, which probably means their audience knows that. You know, they probably don't get a ton of repeat listens. They probably don't have a huge audience because just asking the questions that you've been given, there's nothing intriguing about that. Something really digging deep. You know that Hot Ones guy who does the hot wings with celebrities? It's a YouTube show called Hot Ones. And it's this little guy, and he eats hot wings, and he sits across a table from, at this point in time, from a celebrity who's also eating hot wings. And they eat one wing at a time, and they get hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. But the most fascinating thing is that he does incredible research, and he asks crazy questions that the hosts would never have thought of, that somebody would have found or asked. So not only are you waiting to see Jim Carrey's eyeballs sweating because he's eating, like the hottest hot wing on the planet, but you're also about to hear a question that you didn't even know. Like I saw that you won the Pinewood Derby when you were a kid. Like, did you and your dad build Pinewood Derby cars together? And Jim Carrey is, like, what? How did you find that out? Kind of a thing, you know? And that's what keeps people coming back. So if they're going to ask you for questions, send them, but don't send them on purpose. Like, you want the host to do their job. You know, you want them to be intriguing. You want them to find out the stuff that they want to find out. But just know that when you're doing the show, you should have a little sticky that says, here are the three things I absolutely need to say during this episode. And at some point, I'm going to turn a question so that I can say these things.
Three things, huh?
I would say, yeah, I would
Yes,
tell them these are the three things we need.
yeah, awesome.
Like if it's
What
a
are
book, you need to at least at some point say who the book is for. Like that audience needs to self-identify with, oh, that book is for me. Like that needs to happen.
yeah.
So,
So I'm gonna put you on the spot.
yeah.
What are the three things that you came on this show to say?
That is a good question.
Because for the record, I invited Dan. Dan did not pitch me.
Yes.
So
Yes.
there's a point to be made there. But I would be interested to know what the three things are.
So my first one is vested audiences. Is I need people to know, because if you Google that, like I'm the only one. I invented the phrase,
The
so
phrase
I'm
is coined by Dan Morris, everyone.
yes.
Vested audiences.
And then that I like you started it, that I do this for clients. So, I make sure that that's part of it. Otherwise, people can't see in their head, like, oh, I could hire that guy. And then I just want people to realize that I am actually this beautiful in real life.
I would say that you accomplished all three of those things. I
Yes.
do want to say, since you brought up that you do this for clients, I want to make the point. I probably should have said this at the beginning. I've known Dan for, I don't know,
A decade.
NAMS 3, maybe? It was a long time ago. It was more than a
Yeah.
decade. I would say it was probably
Yeah.
more like 15 years.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I first, so funny story. The reason I knew Dan at all, the reason he stood out at this conference that we both attended, was because Dan was the guy who got on the airplane to go to the conference and left his suitcase at home.
Oh, that was the first one?
That was the first one. So
Yeah.
just, you know, It was
Oh, well,
quite
you know what's even
memorable.
worse is I drove. So I didn't put the suitcase in my car.
Oh, you drove. Oh, so you weren't even getting on a plane. You drove.
Was even
Okay.
worse. Yeah.
All right.
I just
Good.
got in the
Okay.
car. I'm like, all right, well, I'm
Got in the car
going.
and went. Well, you were excited. So, that's how I know Dan. That's how long I have known Dan. And when my coaching client came to me and said, I want to get interviewed on podcasts, or she and I had talked about it, and she's like, who can I hire to do this? And I knew that I knew some people who had hired podcast pitch agencies, right? The
Yeah.
people who say you got to have a one sheet, and we're going to, shop your one sheet around to all of the contacts that we have. I knew that I had client or that I had friends and clients who had hired these agencies before. So I reached out to several of those people, and they gave me names. And these agencies are very, very good. They're very, very expensive. One of them
Yeah.
is like $5,000 a month or something.
You gotta up the game.
Yeah, right. And then I thought, Dan does this for Rachel, so I'm going to reach out to Dan and see who Dan knows. And I was secretly hoping that Dan would say, I can do that. And he did.
Yes, I did.
And he did.
Yeah.
And he gave me, Dan, you gave me such an incredible list of ideas after just a very short time that I was so impressed that I emailed my client. Her name is Kay, by the way. I emailed Kay and I said, this is the guy you need to hire. I really think
Nice.
you need to work
The
with
only
Dan.
thing that I don't like about agencies is they have a list of podcasts.
Yeah,
And they use their list.
I think that's both a good and a bad thing. I mean, I think it that you have an in there because they have a list of podcasts that they've
Yeah.
worked with, and so there's kind of a guaranteed placement. But I
But is
think
it
the
the
way that
right
you've
podcast?
described your system here, I think there's guaranteed placement there too, and it's maybe better placement than you would get with just a generic, hey, I've got this guest, what's your schedule look like kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm not against it. I think if you're a lot, I think a lot of them are good if you're trying to teach entrepreneurs how to do better digital marketing or something. I think some of those are like they have all these entrepreneur podcasts lined up. But if it's something other than that, I don't know how many agencies have contacts where you need to go. And then if they don't, what do? I don't know. I don't know what they do.
And what's the quality of the results too?
Yeah.
That would be
You know,
my
I will say
question.
that a lot of the time I feel like the quality comes down to the guest.
Yeah.
Like, even if there's a small audience, I mean, if you know your stuff and you can create that intrigue and that desire, you can make sales. You know, like when we got on the Today Show, we sold, I guess you would say, 400 books. And then we got on Good Morning America. I would say we sold 400 more. And then, basically the next day, like that entire thing dries up. It's gone. But there are people who get on and don't sell any. So they get on like the biggest platform you could get on, but then they just haven't been invisible long enough to realize here are the things I need to say. I need to make sure the person on the other side self-identifies with what I have. Like, this is for, so all the people who fit that profile listening will actually realize, oh, this is for me. So you really have to, you really got to do your homework on the guest side. Don't ever blame the agency or the person booking. Always blame yourself, because if you get on a show, I mean, it's up to you, really. Whether it's a good show or a bad show, it can be totally up to you. Even if it's the wrong show, you could still make sales because somebody listening will know somebody who would like what you do. They'll email, That's the whole idea of social media sharing. When Rachel writes something, people share with all the moms they know because they know the moms will want to hear it. That's the same concept. If you're on the wrong show, if you have the right message, somebody will tell somebody. Somebody will send the link. Somebody will be like, you have to listen to this. This totally sounds like you. Like, that's kind of what you need. So just be grateful for any appearance that you have, and figure out for yourself, all right, how am I going to make them, how am I going to make the most of this?
What are the three things on the sticky note?
Yeah, how am I going to make the most?
Yeah.
And sometimes the most that you can make is you make sure you say the right things, because you're going to use Headliner to pull those little snippets out, and you're going to make social media stuff out of those. You're going to have a little quote of you saying this, you know, on this podcast, and you're going to have another 13 seconds of you saying this on this podcast. So maybe you got to figure out, all right, this is not the right show I need to be on, but I'm going to say these five things because we're going to pull those little things out, and that's going to be my social media stuff. So you just got to
So what
figure out, all right.
was that a specific tool? You mentioned Headliner. Is that a tool?
Yeah, Headliner is great. I think Descript is one. Headliner is a awesome tool for podcasters. You load up your thing, and it will start pulling out little clips for you, little 5, 7 second, 13 second, 20 second clips, and it will make the whole all these little video things you can put on Instagram. You can put everywhere.
Oh.
Yeah,
Fabulous.
they're.
I'm going to check that out. I'll put the link in the show notes.
Yeah.
Say in podcasting land. Dan, what do you want to leave everybody with that I didn't already ask you? What did I miss?
So whether you podcast, whether you have any desire to podcast or not, it doesn't really matter, because podcasts are the only form of communication where the person listening is doing so without distraction. Like every other thing, you're reading a blog post, your kid is pulling at you to, you know, get more food. Everything else, YouTube videos, there's always a distraction. But with podcasts, you're in somebody's ear when they're running at the gym, or they're in their car on a commute, you know, or like Bob Jenkins, they're mowing their lawn. So this is your one shot at totally being in the voice in someone's head, unadulterated. If you have a podcast, that is the advantage, because you are, unlike everyone else, you're getting full attention. But if you don't, then you should probably piggyback on these audiences that all of these podcasters have built. Because they're not only listening to the host, they're listening to the guest. And it's you for the first time ever. Even if there's 500 people, can you imagine 500 people showing up in your front lawn to hear you say something? Like, that would be awesome. So, you know, for
It's a little
podcasts,
intimidating when you put it that way.
yeah, you know, exactly. Like, it doesn't, maybe it's not 50,000 like John Lee Dumas, but just imagine if 500 people came in to hear you every Wednesday. No, your front yard. That'd be a lot of people. That'd be pretty awesome. So take advantage. Don't deny it. Just go in. If you don't like video, no, fine. Just try to find the podcasts that are audio only. Yeah, that'd be my only thing. But look at me. I'm not the most beautiful guy. I love video. Like, you can do
Video,
it too.
video, everybody can do video. Don't be intimidated by video. Dan, where can people find you? How's the best way to get in touch?
You know, I used to say Twitter, but now people just don't use Twitter that much.
Twitter's kind of the social media non grata these days.
Yeah, I mean, it was my favorite for a long time. I guess facebook.com/Dan R. Morris. I'm Dan R. Morris everywhere.
Dan R. Morris,
Yeah.
everywhere your social media takes you.
Yes. Yeah. Come hang out.
All
I'll help you
right.
out too. If you want, I'll read your book, or figure out what you sell, or, you know, go through every page of your website and figure out, how do I get this person on a podcast?
I think that would be a wise investment if you are looking to build your visibility, be more seen. Get your message out into the world.
Yeah. And I do go through your episodes when you've done it. I listen to it. And then I'll tell you, like, this is what you need to switch the way you do this, or you got to add in your pitch here, or you're missing something. You know, you need to say this thing. I
Oh,
hope.
so there's feedback involved.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just getting on the shows. It's feedback about how to better
Well, you know,
take advantage of those shows.
it's selfish feedback because I need good testimonials, which means I need to make sure that you're getting the result you want. So I help massage that so that you do a good job, so that you get the result you want, and then you could give me a good testimonial. You know, it's
Awesome.
selfish.
So that's just smart. That's just smart business. You're a
Yeah.
smart guy.
That's what it's for. But yeah, I'll help you figure out. You need to stop saying this. It's annoying. You start saying this.
Stop being annoying.
Yes.
Dan, thank you so much for joining me today. I really
Yes.
appreciate you jumping on the call and I emailed you like 3 days ago and here we are. So that was quick response. I appreciate
I'm
it.
sorry that my background isn't as glorious as yours.
You know, it doesn't matter. It's not about the presentation, it's about the quality of the information.
Yes.
And we have excellent information. I'm going to be putting this to work in my own business. So thank you so
Right on.
much for
Well,
sharing
thanks for
all of
having
your
me.
wealth of knowledge.
I probably know two or three more things.
You probably do. So,
Probably held back. Maybe three more things.
maybe we'll have you back again. All right. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate
Right
you.
on. Talk to you
Have a good
soon.
one. If you like what you hear on the Tiny Course Empire podcast, you're going to love all of the courses and workshops and support you'll find inside Six Figure Systems. That's my monthly program where we dig into online marketing for regular people like you and me. We don't do big launches, we don't have the big headaches, and we don't have the big expenses that come with them. Instead, we focus on creating repeatable, sustainable systems that continue to grow over time and that don't suck up all of our energy or require a 10-person team to manage. You can come see what we're all about at sixfiguresystems.com, and I'll see you on the inside.